While used cars are always an option to buy, a slew of 2021 models are in demand since production changed the car options for many 2020 vehicles.
Whether an oldie but goodie or a new must-have high-tech vehicle, visit Rorick.com for all of your vehicle needs. And now we start the Jagoff podcast at the Vault in, is this Neville Island?
According to the Oxford Dictionary, the word Jagoff is defined as a noun, which means a stupid, irritating, or...
Here's how Pittsburghers define a word Jagoff. When someone cuts you off on a parkway. Jagoff!
Or someone scares the... out of you.
Yeah, Jagoff.
Or it's a term of endearment.
How you been, Jagoff?
This is Mark Madden.
Hi, this is Larry Richard.
This is Gavin Wild Bill.
Hey, this is Kurt Angle.
Hi, this is Rocky Blair.
Hey, it's Rick Sivak.
Hi, this is Greg Brown.
I am Tyler Kennedy.
This is Santonio Holmes.
And this is the Jagoff Podcast. This is the Jagoff Podcast. Listen, near and dear to my heart, we're going to talk about a little Save Our Stages. We've gotten to know some of these guys who have really put their efforts and their heart and souls into this initiative, because as we want a disclaimer, everybody is dealing in a different way through the COVID-19 effects. Every small business, every large business, everybody has their thing. Our hearts go out to everybody. But as we said, you know, there's certain little pockets that are nearer and dearer to certain people. And it's just important to John and I, coming from entertainment backgrounds, to focus on the fact that maybe there's a way that we can help. So before we get into the podcast, what was on the blog, John?
Someone sent us a story about a guy who was at Walmart because they have this really nice return policy. They'll pretty much return anything. And a guy had a dripping car battery. And he was mad that they were not going to take his car battery back. So that was one of the Jagoffs. And then you wrote a blog about, you know, the Bernie memes were hilarious. If you're looking for happiness in this time of when you're doldrums, go look at the Bernie memes. But then there were some people that were actually offended about Bernie memes. Yeah. For God's sakes, nobody's treating Bernie bad. He's like everybody's grandpap. So the Jagoff of the week, actually, for Alista, was people who didn't like the Bernie memes. So if you're listening to the podcast for the very first time, make sure you go to the radio.com app and subscribe to it, or Apple iTunes. If you're on Apple iTunes, please give us a rating. 4 or 5 would be good. There's not a 10, so just give us a 4 or 5, because that helps in the rankings on the Apple iTunes. So, anyways, today's, as you said, a little bit of a different podcast. We normally have people in and out, kind of changing guests, but this is like a nice social issue for us to tackle because of the entertainment background here. As Bob, who we're going to meet in a little bit, said, you know, the performance venues were the first to close, and they'll be the last to open.
And so I think it's best, is if you are an avid follower, you know that we technically and typically do this magazine style where we give a couple minutes to each guest. But we're going to actually go down the line. I'm going to introduce you that we have Bob, Eric, and Adam here. And they're going to let you know who they are and why we are here today at the Vault Studio, which you have to check out because you need to explain what this is, too. So if you can introduce, Bob, who you are, where we are, and your affiliation with Save Our Stages.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me. I'm Bob McCutcheon. I'm the owner of the Vault Recording Studio here on Neville Island. And the studio is a full production recording studio that we built and opened officially, I guess, back in 2018. And got involved with Eric. We've been working together a lot with Royal Honey, his band. And, you know, he came up with the idea of SOS to try to help the local venues. And so we recorded the song here originally. And as the guys will say, it started off as an idea with a couple of bands to, you know, a full community of artists and musicians who came together to record the song, and now it's expanding into a concert series. So just happy to be a part of it.
Yeah, I love that. And Eric, you may have seen him, because if you're true Jagoff followers, you are watching our Toyota tailgates, because everything in Pittsburgh deserves a tailgate. And Eric was on there when we were live at Excuses when the song actually came out 2 weeks ago.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so welcome, Eric.
Thank you. I'm Eric Roger. I'm the guitarist in a band called Royal Honey. And back in late September or early October, I came up with an idea for a song that was kind of just hitting me. It was an idea for SOS 2020. And when I realized that it wasn't sounding like a song that would fit in my band's set list, I actually went to Bob and I said, you know, I've got this idea. It's not going away. It's a kind of a catchy, cheesy chorus. And I've got this idea for maybe bringing other bands in and doing some gang style chant, like backing vocals. I said, I think we could probably get, you know, maybe 6 or 8 of our friends' bands to come through. And I wanted to get my friend Rocky Lamondi from the Borstal Boys to play bass on it and produce it. And I figured we could probably put this together in a couple of weeks. So I had the idea for this song. Rocky got involved and now has, you know, we put the song out. It came out on January 8th. Rocky then had the idea to turn it into a, you know, a concert series, which is kicking off on January 28th. That'll go for 4 weeks. And then, you know, and then Bob really had the idea to, you know, song, concerts, shows, and Bob take, you know, had the idea to take it and maybe see if we can make a whole community out of this. And so that's really where I think the direction of the idea is going. And, you know, I couldn't be happier about that because, you know, an idea that just kind of came to me either, you know, in bed or it's or in the shower has kind of blossomed into this this whole initiative that I just feel great about, we all feel great about, and we just wanted the venues and everybody else who's part of this infrastructure for live music in this town to know that the bands are with them. And we had 27 bands and over 60 musicians show up just for the song, and now that circle's even expanding more than that with the concert series and the community that we're trying to build out of.
And our next guest, or additional guest of part of the roundtable, is Adam Valen from Drusky Entertainment. Adam, you've been on the podcast. We've been goofing off watching, rating karaoke in Market Square. And this is a little more serious because, again, this affects your wallet. This affects the people that you know. So tell us a little bit about what you guys are doing with the whole SOS connection.
Yeah, and thanks, John. Thanks, Rachel, for having me back on again. My name is Adam Valen, and aside from, you know, my day-to-day is with Drusky Entertainment as marketing manager, but over the last 10 months, I've really been involved with the National Independent Venue Association, which is a collective of now about 3,000 independent venues, promoters, festivals across all 50 states and D.C., all with the collective, you know, the collective mission to try and help preserve the ecosystem of the independent venues and musical ecosystem. And I think that it's a perfect dovetail to what Eric mentioned about community, about how the need for this all to kind of come together, because as you mentioned before, and what we've been, you know, kind of flaunting almost, is that, you know, our industry was one of the first to close and it will be one of the last to reopen. So going on, you know, now almost a year with no revenue, trying to find ways to, you know, advocate for ourselves and to bring this community together to understand that not only, you know, is there an economic is our industry an economic driver for our communities, but the quality of life that we bring in just every day, you know, the need to get out to go to a show and just that urge to do that we can't do anymore. I think the sense of community that has been built around this movement of Save Our Stages has really started to transition now, you know, into more of a local communal approach. That's why I'm really, really thrilled to hear about what Bob and Eric have been doing with the SOS 2020. I really wasn't even officially, you know, introduced into it until we have these weekly meetings with a lot of our, you know, local independent venues now that by day we're typically competitors. I mean, that's what our nature is to do, is to, we compete against each other to try and get shows into our venues. But lately, just out of necessity to just survive this together, we've been coming together and trying to have conversations to figure out how we can help one another. And I remember one week Liz Berlin from Mr. Smalls was on our call and was like, "Hey guys, I just got asked to do this song called SOS 2020. They asked me to come in, and I had never heard of it before, and that's when I started approaching Eric and Bob about the song and immediately wanted to get involved in it, because it, again, dovetailing into the idea of community, it really affects everybody. The idea of our venues closing around town, if there's no support coming from it, you know, where are our artists going to play? Where are our staff going to go to? So it's just this really big, humbling experience to kind of rally behind, and that's what we've been trying to support over the last 10 to 12 months or so.
And in our culture of disclaiming, I just wanted to disclaim that we have diversity in your group. We have diversity in all of this. Mm-hmm. However, this is a recording studio, and we can only fit so many people in here. Right, so, yeah. You know, I realize what with the panel that we have here, but we do know that the SOS process and project involves quite a diverse of individuals. Eric, do you want to talk about that even?
Sure. I mean, so, you know, like I said, it started as a small idea, and originally I just figured, you know, Rocky and I would throw down the basic tracks, because between the two of us, we've got the ability to play, you know, all the instruments, and then I thought that we would bring in, you know, maybe five or six of our friends with great voices to do lead and backing vocals. But once we started, you know, putting the call out for help, everybody was saying yes. And then Bob said, well, let's expand the amount of time that we can give to this. So he just volunteered more studio hours, which was the only way that we could afford to bring in 27 bands and 60 musicians. So, you know, we've got an array of different genres. We've got, you know, we've got friends that are girls. We've got, you know, friends that are minorities. We've got friends, you know, we had Liz and Patrick from Rusted Root volunteer their time. That was I don't want to say surprising to me, because, you know, Patrick is a friend. He was in the Borstal Boys for a while, and we shared studio space with them at a rehearsal space. And so, you know, it wasn't overly surprising, but when those guys and people like Keith Nelson, who was a founder of Buck Cherry, was willing to take a day and record guitar tracks from L.A. and send them to us, and then we had some nationally renowned people from like the heavy metal side of things. So we basically, you know, we tried to invite everybody that we could in the limited amount of studio time, right, because we needed to shotgun the project as well. It was called SOS 2020, so our goal was to have it out by the end of 2020, and we missed that by a week because of the lead time we needed for, you know, for the streaming sites and the distribution sites. It came out on January 8th, but, you know, the whole project was pretty much from concept to implementation was, I think, less than 3 months. It was late October to basically Christmas.
Which, Bob, if you can jump in and explain, yeah. So to you three, it's like, wow, that's not a lot of time. But people who really don't know the industry, they might think, oh, 3 months is a lot of time. So can you explain a little bit about, and before you even go into that, I think it's important to say, I'm sure that you are hit up regularly for, hey, do you want to give me some free studio time? Because I'm the next thing, right?
I've never heard that before.
Right.
Mostly from me.
I mean,
hey, Bob, I've got an idea.
That's our pitch. So I'm sure. So number one question, what was it about this project that really resonated to say, let me open my doors for these people to come in and really make a difference? And then number two, explain that time frame and why that is so crucial.
Sure. Well, it was really a no-brainer for me. I mean, a lot of what we do at the Vault, you know, our mission at the studio is much broader than just a recording studio. We are very community focused. We have a foundation and a charity that we run that actually is also doing some matching funds for the SOS projects. We're actually matching any of the money that the music makes with an equal donation up to $2,000. So we've always been very community-oriented, and a lot of the reason that I built this was to try to bring that community together. And so this was a natural extension. It was an opportunity to demonstrate that. The amount of time was extraordinary. I mean, you can imagine 60 different artists in the ordinary course is a lot to try to record. To do that in a socially distant, you know, protocol where we literally, you know, Eric hates when I say this, but it was kind of like a We Are the World kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And the number of faces that were in the
Eric,
song.
Eric, what's wrong with that? That's one of my favorite songs of all time.
Yeah.
MJ.
It was like that Pittsburgh version, I suppose. Except we couldn't all stand on the risers together. That was the thing. We couldn't get a group picture because of, COVID.
So we literally had to rotate all of the sessions. So the scheduling and the logistics and getting people in and getting them out, it just took a lot of time to do that. And then you can imagine the recording itself, the number of tracks that we had and the editing and the comping and all the things that you would normally do when you have 60 different artists singing. There's a lot of vocal tracks.
Sure.
But I think it also comes out in the music. It sounds really cool as a result of having that many, you know, that many people involved. But yeah, it was a tremendous undertaking that we really didn't even start to think about until very late in the year. So to do the recording, to do the editing, the mixing, and then the distribution, it's actually pretty amazing that we got it out as quickly as we did.
And for anyone who doesn't know, it's a song that's still available, right? So if you download it, how much is the download? 99 cents?
Yeah, it's 99 cents, and the Ryan McCutcheon Rhythm 19 Fund is matching any proceeds from the sale of that song, dollar for dollar, up to $2,000. So it's
and the whole, every proceed goes to...
To NEVA.
NEVA.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
It's all...
Yeah, the Emergency Relief Fund,
yeah.
Which
yeah.
is for the venues that we're trying to help.
So, Adam, I guess then the next, you know, that sort of was set up for you then.
Yeah.
So how does that look, and how does NEVA then, does that money go locally into our own, or is it a giant pot so that people can, transparency, understand how it works?
Yeah, transparency, I mean, it can apply for Pittsburgh venues, but it is a national fund. Administered through the Giving Back Fund and worked through it's the National Independent Venue Foundation, which follows the mission of NEVA, which is more of an advocacy arm, but the foundation helps support and grow the industry as a whole. But yeah, I mean, to date, the Emergency Relief Fund, I think, has raised up to $3 million and is
crazy.
We've done... what's now called the SOS Fest, which was a 3-day virtually streamed festival from independent stages across the country, featuring artists from everybody from Miley Cyrus to Foo Fighters to Phoebe Bridgers and a couple others. And they were able to raise up to $3 million on top of individual contributions and amazing projects like what's happening here with SOS 2020. So it does have the potential to reach not only Pittsburgh venues that are able to apply for it, because the goal of the Emergency Relief Fund is to help those that are, you know, literally at their wit's end and that are, you know, weeks away from closing.
Yeah.
So really getting those funds out the door, getting them into the foundation, getting them out the door to venues as they need it. Because while we're in a very thankful situation that the new legislation passed with the Save Our Stages Act, you know, we still don't have a concept of timing. We're still going on weeks and weeks without... You know, funding coming into venues that still have gone on now almost a year without no.
Well, and not to
in.
Mention every venue is different, so you don't know that the need from one to the other. It's not just some token amount that goes to each person and says, okay, now you're saved. You know, everybody has a different level of need.
The need is just it's just so big across the board. Again, you can't tell a bit. You can't have businesses, completely shuttered for 12 months. Not only, we've talked about this before, but not only, no revenue coming in, but, venues still have the hard costs of owning or renting a building. They still have to pay the insurance. They still have to pay the rent and mortgage. Some of them still have staff on board, thankfully, if they're able to. And there's just so many hard costs that are associated with running a business like that. And to have no revenue, any kind of support that comes in is, that's what the ERF is there to do and help support.
Yeah, I think it's just to add to that, I think it's really important. Obviously, to Adam's point, the legislation was critical, right? I mean, that's $15 billion allocated to the industry, but it's not the end-all be-all. And I think the concern I had was that the folks assume, well, now that legislation's passed, we'll be fine. Well, one, the cash isn't in hand yet. And two, this is a prolonged shutdown period. This is a Band-Aid. It'll buy some time. It'll help those who can survive until the time that money does come in. But the Emergency Relief Fund is absolutely critical to helping us bridge that gap. So I think a lot of what we were doing was, first and foremost, is just raising the awareness.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, we can do what we can do to try to raise money. the stimulus money in $15 billion is a big chunk. We're not going to raise that kind of money, but we can raise the awareness and we can make people better understand that this is a long-term issue that's going to be with us for some time, and we're going to need all the help we can get.
That's a great point.
And on top of it, music is how most people are finding solace at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we didn't have music, whatever. So, Bob, my question for you is a little bit about, I want to talk a little bit about the history of why you're involved, what you did here, but So we have kind of the continuum of music. We have Eric as a representative, a microcosm of a writer, creator. And then we have Adam, who books them in the venues. And prior to that, they come in to hear and record a song. Adam books them. Then Eric and his peers, they go out and perform them. So I get where all this happens here. But what's your passion as far as being involved in helping the SOS? I know they're your friends. Mm-hmm. And I know they're your professional peers. And we want to keep them alive. But sort of where did you drudge up, or maybe not even drudge up, you know, why were you so heavily involved in this thing?
Yeah, my background is a little bit, you know, different in the sense that, I've always been involved in music. I've had recording studios since the 80s, but I came up for the last 25 plus years in a corporate environment and with a business background. And this was sort of my passion on the side that I ultimately retired early from corporate and have been doing this because I am pursuing my passion, and music is the passion. But like I said earlier, I think a lot of this has to do with, you know, what drives me is the community side of this. It's bringing everybody together. I've always believed, and I continue to believe more now than ever, that Pittsburgh has amazingly talented artists, right? But we don't get the recognition in this city that a lot of other cities do. Yep. And part of that is because Pittsburgh, we can be a little parochial, right? We are very neighborhood-oriented, and we don't always come together in a way that I think we could to benefit ourselves. And so a lot of my focus has been on trying to understand and enable this music community to come together and be bigger collectively than we currently play.
That's a great point, because it's not recognition, it's almost like, well, it's recognition, but it's not. It's recognition for the fact that it exists, right? The talent is there. But it's not recognition like flashing lights, like, look at me. It's because we are Pittsburgh, and, hey, this is something that we can do. Another great segue to the two of you. I'm not trying to make this telethon-like, but I really want to drive it home to people to understand, Eric, in your case, and I'm getting a little bit personal in the sense that you have a real job, right? As we say, a day job. So music is your passion. You're not relying just on the music industry. But we have to say, disclaimer, 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 there are people who do. I mean, don't forget that as we are saying these heroes or these people who were, you know, we're looking at in the hospitality industry, in the service industry, who have lost their jobs and we're so sad for, this is the same thing. As John said, people are looking to entertainment to bring them up. But the catch-22 is the entertainers, if that's your sole job, what the hell are you doing? Because you can't perform. Talk a little bit about what music was like pre-COVID. So set us up for a band getting ready to go out to a Jurgles to perform, and then COVID hits.
Yeah, it was devastating. We had a full calendar. I know that most of my friends' bands, my peers, my competitors in some cases. I mean, you know, we're a rock and roll band, so, you know, I focus mostly on the rock and roll genre, but we all had full calendars in and around town. There were at least 10 venues that we could reach out to and get a recurring gig at. You know, generally we're on most of these venues, recurring calendars for every other month or so. And when you are regularly playing three or four or five venues, in town, you know, you can do basically gigs every single weekend. And then if you pepper that with out-of-town gigs, regional gigs, play in Ohio, you can play in Philly, you can play in Baltimore. We were never lacking for places to play. We were never lacking for opportunities to play. And the opportunities that we had, you know, we had a full calendar of national gigs, too, as well. You know, I work with Adam a lot because his company brings in a lot of the national shows, and we have a great relationship. So he knows that he can come to my band and say, hey, I've got this great band coming in, and I think that you would be a good fit. Royal Honey would be a good fit to start that show. And, you know, that was a perfect relationship, perfect environment that worked for both parties. You know, we were happy to promote it. We fit well with the Nationals. And so when COVID hit, I had, I think it was three, maybe four nationally booked gigs that I was supposed to open for, like, were immediately gone. One at Hard Rock Cafe, one at Jurgles, one at the Craft House, and these are all great places to play. These are the, you know, they're the top sound systems in the area. It's a very professional gig. I can bring a video person in to video our set, and then it, you know, and we look like one of those national bands that Adam brings in. So, that whole carpet just got pulled right out from under us. And again, I don't make my sole living off of music. So the bands that do, that felt that, you know, I mean, obviously they had all that same impact. They were losing their opportunities. They were gone. We didn't know when they were going to come back. You know, I think originally we all thought, oh, this will all come back probably by the fall. Right. We thought maybe we endure this for 4 or 5 months and this will all be back to normal. Well, we're on a year now, and now we're looking at fall of 2021, I think. And you can probably speak more to when you think things might start to actually level back off and return to normalcy.
Yeah, and I kind of want to piggyback off that point, too, because it's the weirdly, you know, unique thing about our industry is, you know, it's very unique to other industries. It's not like a tech industry that if, like, you know, something like this were to happen, people are able to pivot. They're able to, you know, they're able to take different, like, actions to be able to run their company as is. This, there's so many different subsectors of the live entertainment industry that, you know, I mean, I'm coming from the venue and promoter side that really do revolve around it. But, you know, when it comes to the 12 million that work in the live events industry, that doesn't include all the hundreds of thousands of musicians that are there on a national scale. You know, those that are making a living from being professional musicians, 70% of their income comes from touring musicians, from playing shows and playing touring gigs. When that whole system is disrupted, the entire ecosystem as a whole, you know, whether it's the studio, whether it's the production companies, whether it's
the roadies, ticket takers. Yeah, there's layers. You're right.
I mean, economic impact is exponential.
I mean, I came from I've been in a band for 8 years. I tried to make it, like, we really tried to make it like a full time job. But realistically, when we were playing shows, that was fueling our business, so to say. So, like, we were reinvesting all of our proceeds that we were making into doing stuff like going into the studio, like producing merch, like things that we would do as revenue generating activities by playing shows. And that's how we built that audience to be able to, you know, as a business, be able to produce, you know, sales. And whenever we can't play out, whenever we can't, you know, find the passion to do that or have the ability to do that, that whole, you know, system of being able to raise funds to go into the studio, to be able to record, to be able to produce merch, that's all gone. I just want to talk about, I guess, the trickle down effect of, like, when the venue goes away, all of these other different aspects of the ecosystem go away. So that's why, again, you know, this communal aspect that it's, you know, that it is a very, you know, it's a very cherished and it needs to be an equitable thing going forward as far as making sure that this is a community that doesn't see each other as, again, like a Lawrenceville versus a Squirrel Hill versus a Southside versus anything like that. This is really a community effort, and that's why I'm so appreciative of things that are happening like this.
To people listening, people watching, you know, they sit there, look, you guys, we're having a hard time too, right? Somebody watching is good, look, I'm a server, I'm having a hard time too. But again, there's this thing about, you know, your industry, what did you say, 12 million?
There's 12 million live event workers.
Yeah, and so we're not sitting here doing this podcast to say, oh, whoa, it's us. We're sitting here saying, these three gentlemen and all the other people involved in it have decided to pull up their britches, put their big boy pants on, and go learn the business of the business or execute the business of the music business, get to Washington, get this money. I can't go to work today. I'm sitting with my kids. I'm going to go download a song. Well, if you're going to go download a song, download this one because it makes that 99 cents makes an impact. Mm-hmm. Tell your five friends to go download a song. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great point. You know, there's a line in the song, having our voices heard, right? I think the thing that's somewhat unique, not entirely unique, but somewhat unique with this group is they are a large number of independent business owners, entrepreneurs, who don't always have a collective voice, right? And so NEVA and a lot of these efforts are really trying to lend a voice to a group of people who didn't necessarily have a large collective voice because they're all small businesses, right? Mm-hmm. And so this was a way to kind of bring that together and just highlight that they are one of many. You know, we get sure. it. There are a lot of folks struggling through this pandemic. But it felt like this was one group who was maybe underappreciated or didn't have the same voice that some
or
others
maybe
had.
Overlooked.
Or maybe overlooked.
I just
overlooked.
Don't,
yeah.
And I think I can say that because you're within it. But I think I can say that because again, when we're if I'm down, if I'm having a bad day, I'm like you said, I'm gonna go listen to music. I'm going to go out. I can't. Okay, well that sucks. But have we explored why? What? Who are the people that made that possible? Right?
I guess yeah. Because I guess the. I mean, at least from my perspective, like the main point that we want to try and get across is that, I mean, from day to day, yes, like going, like the experience of going to a concert is a luxury. But at the core of it, we want people to understand that now, like this is not a luxury. These are people's livelihoods that are at mm-hmm. stake. So we want people to understand that, you know, when you go to a show. You know, there are people that live and die by the shows that they do, by the shows they perform at, and you know, really understanding that yes, it is a luxury in a sense, but you know, just the necessity that of understanding what happens really behind the scenes and who makes this industry happen. Mm-hmm. So yeah, to Bob's point, like the advocacy aspect yeah. of this is so critical because you never. Had people paying attention to really the live events industry when it came to yeah. issues on Capitol Hill, and now seeing, you know, majority like politics or it's a huge bipartisan effort, but seeing people like Majority Leader Chuck Schumer wearing a Save Our Stages mask on Capitol Hill, that's from the efforts of people raising their collective voices and making this a top of the hill issue. So I can't stress it enough that the point of like making our voices heard is what has made this campaign so successful.
You know, it's interesting. Maybe to take an optimistic or point of view, or to look at maybe the bright side of what's possible here. Artists are creators, right? And so, if there's one bright spot that I've seen is, you know, we've all redirected our energies, right? You know, when we can't perform live, when we can't be out in public. It's been encouraging to see how many artists have redirected that energy into creating, mm-hmm. right? To writing new music, mm-hmm. creating new projects. And so I do think that when we get on the backside of this, mm-hmm. whenever that might be, I think we're going to be blown away by some of the art that has been created during this period because that's what we've been able to use our time.
That's a great point.
And it'll be a whole heck of a lot easier to explain that and enjoy that than versus all the babies that are coming out of the pandemic, right? Because we're talking about the pent-up frustration that happened when people, right? So I'd rather listen to a music than find out I have four kids
it's
coming,
it's
going to
be
right?
a musical baby boom, right?
right. So let's lighten it up a little bit here. You know, we do want... Listen, if you're listening to the podcast, put it on pause. Go download the song. And they download the song from?
You can find that at it's SOS2020PGH.org. And that is it's www.SOS2020PGHforPittsburgh.org. And you can find everything there. The song is there. We did a full video from this studio. Our friend Alexis from Alexis Art and Design. Talk about a labor of love. She between
fantastic,
you know, yeah. So between Bob mentioned Rocky and how many audio tracks, you know, we had collected because there were 60 musicians. We probably had 200 audio tracks between guitars and all the vocals.
Wow.
And Rocky did the heavy lifting. Bob a lot of it as well, but Rocky did the heavy lifting on. Trying to make that funnel that down into usable stuff. What was the best? And he's really the one that, you know, drove the mix of the song. So everything that you hear, you know, that, you know, Rocky took a lot and funneled it down into the final version of the song. Bob obviously mixed it here on this console. But then for every audio track, Alexis had video of all the musicians. And she put this fantastic video together. So, again, this is probably 3 weeks worth of nonstop work on her part. And the video is out there as well. So, please, you know, just I can't emphasize enough to just, you know, take a moment and just appreciate the number of hours that people put, you know, donated all of their time, and it's just, you know, different artistic visions. You've got the artistic vision of the song, you've got the artistic vision of the video, now you've got this artistic vision of these community shows that Rocky had the idea for, and we're just, you know, we're just trying to roll, like he said, with the art and the creative side of this, and you know, trying to roll it into a community side now.
And like you said, it's a sink or swim, right? I mean, you get to a point where it's like, we have got to make this work, because it, like you said, we thought at first, this is 3 months. Oh, wait, this is going to take us to the fall. Oh my gosh, it's the end of the year. Where are we now? And because it is so fluid, hate the word, but here we are in 2021 still using words like pivot and fluid.
Yep.
But it's the reality. And so how can we be resourceful? Because we can sit here and say, oh my gosh, woe is me. Or we can look at situations like the damn Thunderbird Cafe closing and saying, oh, but we still have Jurgles, or we still have another location. So how do we fuel that upset, that, oh my gosh, I can't believe this happened, into positivity? And I think that's exactly what you guys are doing. So Adam, if people, obviously we want them to download the song, but if people want to, if they're looking to make a donation or they want to support more, how does Neva get, how do we support Neva as well?
Well, yeah, first, definitely buy the song. It's great.
Over and over.
Over and over. Listen, listen, buy it. For Neva specific, if you go to www.saveourstages.com, there is a giant green donate button in the top right of the webpage that goes straight to the Neva Emergency Relief Fund, which is administered through the Giving Back Fund. You can make any donation of any size that you'd like. Anything helps. There's also merch available for purchase. If you're looking to drive things locally, again, go check out your venue, see if they have staff relief funds to help their staff, if they have merch available, if they have any kind of gift cards available, if they're doing any kind of operation, you know, takeout cafe operations, go there, you know, pay them a visit, buy a coffee, buy, you know, whatever you can. But, yeah.
And Bob, we're all coming here to record. How do we do that?
You can give me a call on thevaultrecording.com. You can find us and all the stories, all the links to everything that we're doing, including all of our community activity.
This is just such a good story.
I love it. Yeah. All right. So we have like a question of the day and all that kind of stuff, but let's do some rapid fire, like off the cuff, right? Yeah. Real quick here. Yeah. All right. Go down the line real quick here. We'll start with Bob, Eric, then Adam. All right. Favorite gig food. The gig is over. Favorite gig food. Come on. Favorite gig food, Bob.
You know, I got to go with a big heaping of nachos, I think.
Nice. Yeah. Eric.
Pizza.
Adam.
I played at the Smiling Moose a lot when I first started, so anything at the Smiling Moose.
Okay. All right. You going?
Favorite concert of all time, Bob.
Oh, favorite concert of all time. You know, there's been a lot of them. I actually have to say, when I saw Paul McCartney open Consol Energy.
I've only known you 8 minutes, but I knew you were going to say that just based on
There was something. I could go on about a lot of great
concerts. I have a great story I'll tell you offline about Pete Hewlett and him. Yeah. But go ahead, Eric.
Probably Pink Floyd in 1994 at Three Rivers.
That gave me chills. Do you remember 1994?
I was 1 year old.
I saw him in 87 as well. I saw him in 87 too, and he was -6. So.
Yeah. Adam, beat Adam up right now. Adam, best favorite.
Unless I'm not going to give a Gen Z comment. It was either Eric Clapton at Mellon Arena or Ben Folds with the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra at the Benham Center.
Did he fool us? Nice. Right.
Yeah. All right, we'll do the last one. First concert. This is where I'll admit my very first concert ever was with my sister. We saw the Osmond Brothers. So, Adam, we're all to raise money for SOS, we're all going to kick the crap out of Adam right here for being so young. And until you donate $1,000, we just keep punching him for being so young. But, Bob, first concert.
I've got a similar one. My first concert, my parents took me to see the Bee Gees.
Oh, my gosh. Another one. That's great.
We all have this. I get this question a lot, and I always answer it two ways. I'm like, the first concert that I chose to go to was Iron Maiden in, 1985, and that was at the arena, and that was the one I wanted to. Prior to that, though, I was dragged to a Neil Diamond concert with my sister. My parents made us
one
go,
of those too,
and that was they're coming to America.
They're coming to America today.
Oh, I had to sit there.
It was, hit the record button.
It was Eric Clapton and Mellon Arena.
Okay, so that's why it was the most memorable. That's fantastic. I'm going to stay back and say John is not beating anyone up. We'll dunk tank. Because we want positivity, not mine was Shana.
Non-violent podcast.
Or Huey Lewis in the news. Yeah. Wow, this shows my bicentennial baby. Guys, we absolutely love this time. Whatever we can do to help, you know, please continue to reach out. And please, real quickly, let everybody know about this concert series so that we can know how community-wide we can help support this even more.
Yeah, so the song has kind of morphed into this concert series, which is awesome. There are 4 weeks scheduled right now, and we're hoping to expand that. They start on January 28th, and they run 4 Thursdays in a row through February 18th. There are 3 bands on each bill. So right now, 12 of the bands who participated in the SOS 2020 song are on the SOS PGH concert series. Like I said, we are hoping to expand that, and we're hoping to expand it to bands that actually weren't able to participate in the song. Because we did. We had the invites out to bands and friends that weren't even getting together at the time. They weren't comfortable, you know, even coming outside. So, you know, we're hoping that through these live streams, and these are live streams, so there's no audience there. We're live streaming them over the internet. And so we do have the ability to pump these out to you know, to an audience that's outside of the Pittsburgh demographic, which I'm excited about. But yeah, those will start this week on Thursday. My band Royal Honey is kind of anchoring the first show, so we'll be playing with our friends in the Cheats and Middle Finger Punk. So it's a little bit of diversity, and it's diverse genres. Again, you know, the song and the concert series both right now just kind of mix some rock and roll bands, some heavy metal bands, some punk bands. We're hoping that future installments will have some blues, some R&B, maybe even some hip hop or rap. You know, we're looking at soul. You know, we've got a couple of leads on soul music singers. So again, to kind of accelerate the whole community idea, we're really looking beyond even the song. We're looking beyond maybe even Pittsburgh's borders now, the regional borders. So who knows where this can go.
Give a shout out to Pianos and Stuff too for lending the cafe next door, which, you know, felt for them because they had just sort of finished that space right before the pandemic and haven't really had a chance to fully leverage the space yet, but they've been gracious enough to allow that space to be used for the live stream.
I feel a Toyota tailgate coming on.
I know.
Right?
Absolutely.
All right, guys, question of the day. We weren't going to do this because we rapid-fired you, but record player, 8-track, cassette, CD, or live stream? Bob.
Yes.
All right. Eric?
I'm going to say CD still.
Yeah.
I'm going to go record player.
Really? I love that that's coming back.
Yeah, I've been expanding the vinyl again.
It's awesome. It's amazing. Guys, this is truly going to go down as one of my favorite podcasts. I appreciate the time. Thank you for what you're doing.
So let's thank Bob McCutcheon from Vault Recordings and Eric Roger. If you're in Pittsburgh, if you're in Pittsburgh and you say Walmarts and Sheetses, you'd say Eric Rogers,
but there's no S in it.
Sally Wiggins.
All right. And Adam Vallant from Dressing Entertainment. Can't thank you guys enough. And of course, thank you to Rory Conda, our sponsor.
Thank you.
While used cars are always an option to buy, a slew of 2021 models are in demand since production changed the car options for many of the 2020 vehicles. Whether an oldie but goodie or a new must-have high-tech vehicle, visit Rorick.com for all of your vehicle needs.
So as we end, you're going to hear a little bit of the song that you have to go download.